12 o'clock. Off we go to St Kildan. Say hi to Morris. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Am I that one love, Phil?
You are today at this moment. Interesting thing to talk about today that Morris and I both sort of thought of coincidentally. But the weird thing is that we sort of read about it on social media. Why don't you take it from here?
Well, where else do you read anything
exactly
nowadays, Phil? If you're not listening to HK3 for news, yeah, where else would you get it from?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as you said, your article came through this morning and I had one sitting here waiting for you to have a look at as well. So, snap, here it was. The articles really talk about the brain, about our capacity for thinking, and also the role social media is playing or possibly playing in children's life. So one of the things that in this article, or one of the articles talks about, is the what the author says is the reality that social media is impacting negatively on children's minds.
Yes.
That it's basically going to porridge or hell in a handbasket, as we used to say, or my grandparents or great-grandparents used to say.
Morris, you know something? Obviously, yesterday being April the 1st, April Fool's Day, some wag made the comment that it's the one day that you actually fact-check on social media.
I think they're right. The article makes good points. As you can see, I'm fairly cynical before we even begin about it, because I've read lots of these. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a kernel of truth, because there always is. I just get really, really worried or really, really excited when somebody says, I've found the panacea, I know exactly what it is, and here's the cure. That always sends alarm bells off. And this is one of these articles. It makes the point that because children, and generally children across the globe, it seems to say, are using more and more online things. You know, they're using their games, their social media, they're constantly on it. You know, why don't you go out and play in the fresh air, all that kind of stuff, that their brains really are becoming most, most difficult. And he talks about it being rewired, which is a notion of plasticity, which is true, and that is that our brain is made up of all sorts of synapses, and these things aren't set when we're born. They literally change second by second, minute by minute. Wow. When we think of something new, these synapses make new connections somewhere else in the brain and reconnect and do all kinds of things. It's fascinating what the brain does. So he works on that basis and says that there's so much happening up there that's social media oriented, that all these synapses, all these rewirings have all gone in one direction and nothing else. And he says, of course, because of that, that today's kids are in for a really hard time as they grow up.
Right. Now, the interesting thing at this point is, and I had to double take when I read it, I thought I read younger people are getting bigger brains. And I thought, no, surely that means bigger brain capacity. Because it sounds great, but when the body itself gets bigger, we question it, don't we? So it's not all that glistens being gold.
We do, and that's the second article, the one that I sent through you. It talks about, and this is a study that goes back to the 1930s. It doesn't make it correct, because we take everything with a pinch of salt. It doesn't matter how great it is. You know, the Earth was once flat and we believed it.
Yeah.
So, but what this says is, and I like prefacing it by saying that there is some research behind this that goes back quite a distance. A group of researchers have gone back to studies of the brain that's been taken since the 1930s, quite consistently by universities and others, and they have, for whatever reason, chosen to look at it decade on decade. So in other words, has the brain changed over that almost 100 years now? And what they've found is that the brain has become ever so slightly across the great cohort, which is about 2,500 people in this research project of all generations moving forward, the brain's become slightly larger for each one of them, for each decade of people. Now, we shouldn't, you know, it, just because it's bigger doesn't mean it's better, you know, the old adage. And that wasn't the premise of this article at all. But what it says is, or what it's trying to figure out is, what's causing it and what are some of the ramifications, good and bad, because of it. And one of the really positive ones, and I hope that they're absolutely true, is that it says that there is a possibility that Alzheimer's and dementia will diminish, not disappear, but will diminish over the next couple of decades, because it shows through this research since the 1970s. I mean, this sounds really difficult because we hear about it more and more all the time. Yeah, so we think it, there's a lot, and there are a lot of people suffering. But what it says is statistically there is actually a 12% decrease in people having Alzheimer's and dementia because of the population growth.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are more people on the planet, but as a percentage of those more people, actually less people are getting dementia just greater numbers of us because there's more of us on the planet. Yeah, that kind of makes sense, that tautology?
It does, and it's basically taking us in one direction. That's the second, the one that Morris sent me, but it's referring to the other. The great rewiring. Is social media really behind an epidemic of teenage mental illness? Well, is there an epidemic of teenage mental illness, for starters?
No. And that's not to downplay it. It's not to say it's not true, so stop yelling at the radio. But what I'm saying is that there is a great uptake in it. What I think is wonderful, and this is a strange thing to say in this comment, what I think is wonderful is that we are now talking about it, that teenagers are allowed to say it, because before they would not have been allowed to say it. No one talked about any mental illness whatsoever on this planet. Mm. And that was only 10 years ago. It was a no-go topic.
Mental health, they're the two words.
Mental health, as
a rule. Yes.
So what's happened now is that the floodgates have opened and you can now talk about it. It's been normalised. So, of course, like any floodgate, we are hearing a lot of conversation about it, which is all true and all terrible and all those things that we know to be. But let's put it in context that it is now allowed to be talked about, so we're hearing it more and we're putting more great things in place to action and to assist. Mental health, thankfully, is now seen as just as important and is just as ordinary as physical health. You know, a broken arm we could see, so we used to do something for it. A broken mind, we couldn't see so well, so we used to fob it off and say it didn't exist.
Yeah.
That's not true anymore. And that's where I think this premise is, that of course there are lots and lots and lots of people that have mental health issues or concerns or needs, but that's we're hearing about it because we're hearing about it, and that's the good thing.
Give it a bit more context. The article is based on a book by an author called Jonathan, is it Haidt or Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. It's called The Anxious Generation. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, but what he makes is a comment of, he says, this is directly from the book,
yep.
And this talks about the great rewiring of children's brain. It's designing a fire hose of addictive content that entered through kids' eyes and ears, and that by displacing physical play and in-person socialising, these companies have rewired childhood and changed human development on an almost unimaginable scale.
That makes sense.
That's the premise.
Yeah.
I don't think it does.
No. I mean, logically, the words he uses, the fire hose, and when he says addictive content, you're constantly being dared to click me.
Well, you are, and that's the premise. That's why the book will sell well. That's why the book has sold well. But it is, to me, many statements made without much proof. In the book, he goes on, he talks about scientific proof, he talks about graphs, he talks about charts, and he correlates one thing to another.
Right.
But they're not direct research. In other words, he's taken one research done by one researcher, one team of researchers that proves or disproves one thing, and then overlaid that with a completely different set of research capacities or different research findings from somebody else, somewhere else about something else, and says these two things stick together and make sense, therefore. So one of them is that children aren't going out as much as they did, in other words, not having physical activity, which I don't think is true, and the research in Australia certainly doesn't prove that to be true, and the time people are spending online, and he's saying, well, that means that because people are online, they don't have time to go out to play and do the rest of it, so therefore they don't, and their brains just become this wired mesh.
He also says he's not a psychologist, but I think it might be, as I just said, the choice of words, the vocabulary he's using, because it's quite interesting. He's getting you into the vibe of addictive signals, like video games were.
Yep. He is, and we shouldn't downplay it because many, many people are addicted to video games just as they are with anything else. They're, you know, addicted to social media as they are with anything else. I'm not apologising for social media. It has ills, it has concerns, it has things we need to be worried about. We need to temper it, but we can't blame it for all the ills because it's been around for, 10, 11 years? We were doing this kind of stuff before then, and we're doing it for millennia. It says that children now actually spend more time outdoors than they did before. This is across the board. We can individualise and say, you know, my cousin or my nephew or whatever else don't. Yeah. And that's true of them, absolutely. But statistically, kids are actually spending more time outdoors. In Australia, we have more kids participating in sport than we have in the last 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, so there is this belief, again, like the Beatles, you know, going to hell in a handbasket, you know, the world's terrible, black and white TV's going to make us, you know, wish the devil came earlier, all that kind of stuff, you know, gas, electricity. This is another one of those. It's being blamed for what are basically human foibles, things that existed before that perhaps are triggered in different ways now by whatever new technology's around.
Interesting, they're talking about rewiring, isn't it? It's quite a crazy picture.
It is, but it does make sense given the way the brain works. So I'm totally up on the rewiring because we're doing it all the time. Listening to this conversation rewires hopefully some people's brains in the right way, and others, you know, triggers them in another way. But we're doing it every moment of every day of our lives. Our brains learn something, we learn something, and all of a sudden we make connections, put them away in a little filing cabinet upstairs called the brain, and it's there when we need it. That's what rewiring is.
Well, once again, morrisfuturist.com if you want to see his take on it. Which bits did you focus on in your article? Because we haven't really got time to go all the way through it.
We don't. I mean, I kind of like the idea of this growing brain, seeing if it was true or not, seeing what it meant. One of the things that I really enjoyed, and if I'm hoping it's absolutely true, as the researchers say, and that is, as I've said already, that we might have lesser indications of dementia and Alzheimer's moving forward. Mm. And that's because what we believe happens now is that the brain is actually taken over with dementia and Alzheimer's. It's taken over by cells and other things. What they're positing here is, of course, if the brain is larger, then it's likely that less percentage of it will be taken over if that is true of how it spreads itself. That's not to say it won't exist, but that it's totally possible. As I said, about 12%, they say, is less people as a total percentage of population who are getting it now.
Great place to wrap up is where you take it on your blog, The Myth of the Born Genius, why we all have the potential for greatness. And I've always been fascinated by that. The natural talent is the way I've expressed it when it comes to musicians, and they don't all agree. You know, and then somebody brings up, it's like Godwin's Law. And funny enough, Mike Godwin was the guy that I got that article from. Godwin's Law, the probability of a conversation turning to Hitler online, approaching one, and all that stuff. Well, in musical terms, Mozart is that, and it's approaching one. But people argue that, yeah, he was a talented bloke, but it was down to the pressure that his father put on him and all sorts of other things.
And that seems to be what it often is. And that's another article that I put out just earlier this morning that talked about, as you said, the myth of the born genius. I hear it all the time. You know, I wasn't born to this. I don't have the smarts for this. I can't do this. And I've heard that for the last 30-odd years from nearly every audience member, and me included. I mean, I say it every day too. But the reality is when you begin to look at what we would consider to be geniuses, the Einsteins of the world, you know, the Beethovens of the world, the people that stand out through history as having achieved or left a legacy, you find that, in fact, their brains often, when they're looked at, and Einstein's brain has been studied, Beethoven's as well, all the rest of it, they're no different from anybody else's. It's the way that they applied themselves and what they found to be important and where they put their energy that really turned them into what we would call a genius. It's work for genius, not born for genius.
That's what people have said when I brought up the Mozart thing. Apparently his dad was a massive taskmaster. I think another thing, which we must get onto another day, is not the prodigious, you know, the young talent. It's when people are late developers. They go from 0 to 1,000 when they get to about 30. I mean, in fact, you know, talking to musicians, Edward Elgar didn't get a hit till he was about 41. Not that that has much play on his genius.
And again, there's a lot of conversation around that too, because it is absolutely true for a great cohort of people that often using the euphemism, you don't have to find your straps until you're 20 or 30. You kind of find that direction. And using this thought process in today's article, that's exactly that. Once you begin to put your mind to something, it's amazing how much of a genius you can become in it quite quickly.
It's quite funny, actually, because you've written, he's put here, it's great, this, read it if you can, morrisfuturist.com. It says that Thomas Edison, the genius inventor, famously stated, genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. His relentless pursuit of innovation led to the light bulb and countless other inventions. If you watch the Edison story on Drunk History, you will find out that Edison was, you know, a massive grifter and not a very nice guy, according to them.
He certainly was not somebody who was well-liked in his time, and it's believed that many of his inventions
were nicked.
He's not here. Yeah, exactly. He's not here to defend himself. Weren't really his. He just somehow managed to appropriate them at the right time.
Just watch that Drunk History, Edison. It's just genius. Yeah. Did you draw many conclusions? I see where you're going with a few plates that you've got spinning on in this area, Morris. What's your sort of takeaway?
Well, the conclusion for me for this article and for all the others is that it's really hard work that it comes down to, hard work and focus. As much as keep trying to find that mythical, magical, you know, way that things will work, it just isn't there. And it's the same with this article that you sent through. There isn't a single answer to anything. It's a complex matter of just being human and keep on plugging.
I suppose the interesting thing is really slap bang into your yard, which is futurism. So we have teenagers now, and I guess this study would have to be a bit long form, wouldn't it, to really get some conclusions? 10 years, something like that.
Yeah, so the article I sent through to you is a longevity, so it does have that 100-year history, and it certainly will continue on. It'll be fascinating to see the size of our brains increasing, if that's true. The other thing we didn't say in that conversation is that it's believed through archaeological digs and the rest of it that our brain actually hasn't increased in size in 100,000 years.
Has not, you're saying?
Has not increased in size in 100,000 years of archaeological digs and human brain finding stuff.
Yeah.
So this is the first evidence in the last century or so. And we're talking microscopic. You know, we're not talking huge increases. We're talking small percentage increases. But it's the first time that we have seen in the last 100,000 years that the brain is increasing. What's causing that and why is fascinating, and what it's going to do to our mental capacity and our health capacity, how it might change how we live, love and work. Because I think it will, if it's true, will also be interesting to see.
Yeah, well, Haidt reckons social media is really behind this epidemic, as he causes it. I mean, one way or another, social media does have an awful lot to answer for, maybe good stuff as well.
It absolutely does on both counts. And again, if we're talking about putting stuff into our brain, which is all this conversation this afternoon,
yeah,
a lot of the stuff we're putting into our brain is from social media, as you started with, both today's article started
exactly
with social media. So it is our main source of information, just the same way as it was from the priest in the pulpit or the jester who came around or our parents or our school. It's where we get our information in that our information out comes from.
Top stuff, Morris. Have a look at his blog and it's all there. We'll talk next week. Lovely to chat with you, as always. That's Morris Misalowski. Let's check.